Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Musicals.
Hey folks, have you ever thought about your favorite musicals?
Musical history.
Like Color Magic Dance, it's so beautiful. Gather close as we talk you through.
Yeah, da 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 da.
These cherished musical reviews.
Bum, 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 bum.
Musical History Podcast. Welcome, folks, to Talking Musical History Podcast. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Chris. We're talking about The Wiz. Ease on down the road.
First off, let's talk about a little bit of the origins of The Wiz, starting with L. Frank Baum, or as he was born, Lyman, 1856, Chattanooga, New York, and died in 1919 at age 62 in Hollywood, California, where dreams can come true.
Dreams can come true.
People say that he single-handedly created the fantasy genre out of the Andersen, or Hans Christian Andersen style, literary fairy tales. Very similar to Hans, he never once swore or told dirty jokes. But he was born with a bad heart and suffered several heart attacks. His final Oz book was published after his death in 1920, and he used pen names. Some of them were women.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was quite interesting. I found that.
Well, I find it really interesting that Dorothy is like a feminist hero, and like it's really interesting that like that sort of is not apparent unless you like have people talk about it or think about it, right? Like I think about it when I watch my anime all the time about like, which is really interesting in itself. But like, you know, this seems like an opportunity in my high school past that was missed.
He's a complex historical figure when looking at it with a current lens, because obviously he was from a very different era.
I don't know how different the era was.
He was pro women voting. He spoke about women's suffrage a fair amount and made Dorothy the lead character. He did say some things against Native Americans.
Oh, he didn't like the Native Americans either.
In a newspaper editorials in the late 1800s, advocating for widespread extermination of all American Indians.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It dated back to some thought that the Battle of Wounded Knee was thought to be instigated by his bigoted statements. I'm not going to repeat any of it because they are pretty bad and will make you look at his work in a different light than I think you may want to.
I mean, like, you know, you have to be right. Real with the people that you look at. Like at the end of the day, like I recognize that, like, you know, L. Frank Baum was more than likely a racist and xenophobic, but at least he was believed in women and wasn't like, you know, a true a TWG, as they say.
Well, and his descendants in 2006 went to South Carolina to apologize for his comments.
All right.
Writers were influenced by him, such as Gore Vidal, who was openly gay, Ray Bradbury, and Terry Brooks. Apart from his creating Oz, Tamaqua Falls was a spoof of his vacation town in Mokotawa, Michigan, north of Saugatuck off Lake Michigan, taking the name of Michigan author John Cook, but changing the name by one letter from Eston to Estes. So there's one of his Michigan connections.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Saugatuck is known to be a big gay area in Michigan.
Is it really?
It is a huge gay area.
I never knew that.
It is, yes.
Wow. Wow, I've been to Saugatuck a bunch of times. That's hilarious. I mean, I've never even noticed.
It isn't like New York.
Not that there's a problem with that or anything. I just like surprised. Yeah. Like, because I mean, like if you go to Miami.
You know. But Saugatuck's, you know, sleepy little Michigan town where it just happens to be home to some gay people.
It is a sleepy little Michigan town. It's a lovely place.
It's a beautiful. I've been there before, and I didn't know that about L. Frank Baum when I was there. Kind of is completely opposite to the next Michigan connection, which is in 1957. Detroit's libraries banned The Wonderful World of Oz for having, quote unquote, no value for children supporting negativism and bringing children's minds to a, quote unquote, cowardly level.
What?
Yeah. It's 57, so I can imagine it being kind of like the McCarthy era of red and pink and all that, and like and there's more I'll talk about in the star casting and in the politics of this.
Well, like, but, you know, I completely can understand that people might think The Wizard of Oz is a little bit subversive, only because, even what, and we'll probably talk about this as well, Henry Littlefield, one of the first people that started, doing critical, critical look at this piece, Wizard of Oz, and sort of like picking up a lot of different things because it was written in, the near the 1900s, in the midst of the Gilded Age. So like there was this like definite, solid connection of like, you know, Dorothy kind of like symbolizing like the common person, like really, like we were talking about, he's a feminist because you got to think about it, like Dorothy is a true feminist hero, because she doesn't need a man to complete the job, right? The Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion, all men in her life, do not help her complete her task.
She does it all on her own. Absolutely. They helped her. They helped her find her footing.
Well, actually, she helped them more than they helped her.
But it was a symbiotic relationship, in my opinion.
She does it all on her own. And like, and the whole time, no matter going to the Wiz and all of that, like it didn't matter. All she had to do is go through her journey to figure out how she could get home.
Right. Believe in yourself. Right.
Stories about women that, like, you know, they say, like, you know, it shouldn't involve a man. But, like, I think this is the example of why it should involve a man, mm-hmm. because it should show that none of the men actually were a catalyst to her getting to her goal.
Yes.
Dorothy encourages the Scarecrow, the Lion, and the Tin Man, right? Mm-hmm. She encourages them to, that's where the song and the Wiz comes from, right? Like, you know, she's encouraging the Lion to do brave things. She's encouraging,
you're a lion,
right? She's encouraging the Scarecrow to think for himself, right? Like, she's encouraging She encourages the Tin Man's feelings and doesn't, like, you know, put that in a box either. And even around like the Wiz, like I think her sort of resolution and push to get home encourages him too, right? Like that last scene with Richard Pryor, mm-hmm. where he, like, you know, is revealed that he's a fraud, and we're gonna talk about that a little bit more as well. But yeah. It's like in the Wiz, I thought this was an amazing translation, considering. But like to go back to like what Littlefield was talking about, he basically, you know, was saying that, like, you know, and you'll notice that in the Wiz, we're back to the silver slippers instead of the ruby slippers used in the movie The Wizard of Oz, which, you know, even though cinematically was great because of Technicolor, doesn't really match the theme of the show. Where really you're talking about like these silver shoes that are allowing you to go to this golden path to reach this Emerald City of Oz, right? Like, you know, the Emerald City of Oz can represent prosperity and money and like success, right? And she is going there to like find the secrets of the universe so she can find comfort and go home, right?
Yeah.
Basically. And along the way, she's picking up these characters and like, the scarecrow is supposed to stand for like the farmer, the general farmer. Really, in the Wiz, the scarecrow isn't just the farmer. The scarecrow is like slavery. Scarecrow is slavery in this one. He's not the farmer. Yes. He is slavery. He is like, and you have the crows around him telling him how stupid he is while, like, you know, just like teasing him and like imprisoning him up on his like thing. And he's not able to, you know, do the job of scaring the scarecrows away because they've like basically demoralized him and made him feel like crap, even though he has helped them out. He helps them out constantly. It's like, you know, but when he challenges the status quo, he's stupid. You move on to the Tin Man, and the Tin Man is this like man of industry, awesome carnival barker that, like, you know, smooth talking businessman, right? Like he's sort of like doesn't have the ability to feel or connect, right? Mm-hmm. But it that's not true, right?
And yeah, you find out through the story. I would assume that all of you people that are listening to this have seen one version of The Wiz, The Wizard of Oz.
To be fair, Kevin, it is a lot easier to see The Wizard of Oz than it is to see The Wiz. And this is absolutely. This is coming from someone who, like, you know, I'm going to tell you this, like, I assume our relationship with The Wiz is very different than people outside of the state of Michigan. Well, you got to, like, Motown is here.
By black people, for black people, it is that essence of black power and reclaiming a story and telling their own story.
You know, I get what you're saying around that, and I slightly disagree. Okay. And this is why. Like, so Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Okay. I know this is going to sound so off base, but it's just going to wrap right back. Yeah. So it is believed. Actually, I should restate that. The wife of the author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory,
Raoul Dahl,
yes, said that Charlie was initially supposed to be black. Does the story make more sense now? It makes more sense now, though. Think about it, right?
Yes. 100. I did not know that. How did I not know that? Wow. I remember love reading Raoul Dahl when I was a kid. Yeah.
Charlie's the only kid that wasn't a brat.
Uh-huh. I would love to see Charlie be cast in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as a black boy or a black woman, little girl.
Because they were all wealthy and
they didn't care.
Privileged. Like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a little bit about white privilege.
And I think that in talking about The Wiz and The Wizard of Oz in connection, I think it is important and talk about privilege and talk about lack thereof privilege. Gays love the Land of Oz. The film version of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz serves as the definitive pop culture icon of the 20th century Western gay culture. It is referenced in many queer artists' work. Beyond that of Gore Vidal, it was in Mart Crowley's The Boys in the Band, which is about a group of gay men living their open, vulnerable selves in New York City. There was a revival done not too long ago with Matt Bomer and pretty much every other who's who of gay celebrities out there. Also, numerous merchandise of the queer community features Dorothy from Judy's portrayal of her alongside the Escape to Oz idea. It's Have Toto by Leave Kansas, Fuck You, Annie M. There's other stuff like that are out there. Also, Judy herself in The Wizard of Oz and then beyond with Judy Garland and Liz Minnelli are huge icons in the gay community, spawning lots of drag queens way before RuPaul. RuPaul is amazing and a trailblazer.
Yes, most definitely. But I would like to say that she is not the reason for Stonewall. She is not the reason for Stonewall. It's like the whole, like, Marilyn Manson is the reason for Columbine, right? Yeah, those kids. No. Like I know I'm comparing like apples and oranges 100%. However, like the idea that, like, yes, Marilyn Manson might be like violent and whatever, and they might have listened to that, but like honestly, no, their reason for Columbine had nothing to do with Marilyn Manson, because there's tons of people that like Marilyn Manson, which is basically what I'm trying to say about, like, you know, But like what's going on with Stonewall? Like Stonewall was an important protest, but like, yeah, tons of people love, you know, love Judy. Tons of people love her. However, that's not the reason why that protest happened.
She's not the main reason. She's not. No, 100% agreed. We're on the same page there. Yes.
The super fine line, right. Dude.
That's a fine line. To be clear, she was not the reason that Stonewall happened. Her death was surrounding the events, but she was not the reason for Stonewall. John Waters actually said in an interview, he hated the end of the movie when she went back to home. He wanted her to stay in that colorful world, that colorful, fun world of Oz, and not the dull, boring, grayscale world of Kansas.
I mean, you know, John Waters is a smart individual, and he's not completely wrong.
Oh, no, I agree with him. I agree with his statement 100%.
It seems like especially since, like, Dorothy, like, has this sort of, like in The Wiz, doesn't want to be home whatsoever until she gets to Oz, and then she feels like completely estranged and out of place there and would rather be home because like she didn't know how estranged strange could get.
Well, I mean, all Dorothy in the original was looking for a place without any trouble.
But I feel like maybe like the original Wizard of Oz wasn't scary enough.
No, it wasn't.
Right? Like it was super technical and kind of cool looking, but I don't think it was scary enough.
Not at all.
Because, like, even the books are kind of scarier, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read all the books years and years ago. I just want to go over a few of them because they did start L. Frank Baum. He wrote the book in 1900. He then went on to be a writer, actor, producer in 1908 with the Fairy Log of Radio Plays, part of The Wonderful World of Oz, The Marvelous Land of Oz, John Doe and the Cherub, and Ozma of Oz. Then later releasing Dorothy and the Scarecrow of Oz, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, The Marvelous Land of Oz, and introducing the character of Dorothy with Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. All of the movies that are in the Oz canon, both the 1939 original classic as well as the 1980 Return to Oz. I forget the exact year of that. Both Firouza Balk jumping into the role of the Dorothy-like character in the Return to Oz, as well as the James Franco Oz Envision that happened more recently. They all take place from clippings of these books that were in the Oz canon back over 100 years ago. From the book that's an American tradition, from the smash hit Broadway show, the entertainment of the year, Motown, remake of The Wizard of Oz, The Wiz, the stars, the music, wow. In 1977, Motown bought the rights to The Wiz after Berry Gordy and Motown Records sunk $2 million of his own money into finish Lady Sings the Blues, where Diana Ross plays the fictionalized version of Billie Holiday alongside her future co-star, Richard Pryor. And the reason they sunk $2 million of their own money into finish Lady Sings the Blues, racism strikes again. Executives at Paramount did not want to spend more money for a black film.
Yeah, I mean, like, that story is consistent and constantly happens. I mean, like, Spike Lee, Robert Townsend, like, so many different directors can tell you stories. I just hope Jordan Peele is treated a little bit better.
I think he is. Let's hope he can do Gargoyles.
I appreciate your positivity.
Veteran producer Quincy Jones, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You see, originally Scarecrow was going to be Jimmy J. Walker from Good Times.
What? I don't think he has the musical chops to pull it off. I mean, like, it would have been funny to see his body move around like that. But I think with a musical like The Wiz specifically, you need powerhouse singers. You don't need silliness. Mm-hmm. Like, I get silliness. Really, you want like triple threats.
Yeah.
Like in the four main roles. Like the Wiz doesn't have to be anything special. Actually, Jimmy Walker could have been The Wiz.
After he heard Michael Jackson's voice, Jones and Sidney Lumet agreed to push Walker from the film and have Michael Jackson be the Scarecrow. Which, of course, if you know anything about the Jackson history, Joe Jackson tried to stop his son from going on his own. But Cohen paid him enough, and so he agreed. He took the role seriously and learned all that he could from Louis Johnson, a pioneer in African-American ballet, gaining techniques of scarecrow walk and dance from Charlie Chaplin, Fred Astaire, and Gene Kelly.
I bet he enjoyed that.
I mean, it's definitely a role you can look at and
you can see it.
Yeah. Like, he poured his heart and soul into that role.
You can see all those elements.
And I can't, it's almost like the reverse of Labyrinth. Jim Henson talked about maybe having Michael Jackson as the lead character of Jareth instead of David Bowie, but it wouldn't have made the same movie. And although Michael Jackson would have done a great job,
equally as weird,
it wouldn't have been the same. It would have not been in my opinion.
Bowie was the right weird.
Bowie was the right weird for that role. Acclaimed director Sidney Lumet, known for 12 Angry Men, won the Golden Berlin Bear and OCIC Award for Dog Day Afternoon and the 1974 version of Murder on the Orient Express, along with other awards and other films.
Sidney Lumet. He is one of the greatest filmmakers in history. Sidney Lumet.
Chris, what's your favorite Sidney Lumet film?
Sidney Lumet, obviously Network. If I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore. Have you ever heard that quote before? So this is such a rabbit hole conversation, okay. And I really don't want to like get completely into it. But like Sidney Lumet is just really a prolific director that sort of like understood. Like greatly understood the basics of filmmaking, and like I've read like his Making Movies book, and if you are a filmmaker, if you have not read that book, like it will really open your eyes about how films should be made, right? Like just the basic theories of understanding like how the collaborative art of film works.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen 12 Angry Men, Dog Day Afternoon, and his version of Murder on the Orient Express, and I do have to say he is a very, very amazing director.
He's talented. Yeah, yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, you know, you pull together Quincy Jones. They didn't actually want Diana Ross. She wasn't their original choice.
Right.
So like, you know, like he, Sidney Lumet, like as a producer on that, like pulled together a lot of things. They actually had, a different director too. The guy that they originally, wanted to direct the movie was like the director of Short Circuit, later in history. Okay. So that's where that man went. That being said, like when Diana Ross joined the cast, he left. Because I mean, Diana Ross is pretty old for the show. I mean, but I get it. I mean, like, her singing When I Think of Home, jeez, like I get it. I get trying to like. Here's the thing about filmmaking, and a lot of people are like, oh, you know, like the film was nothing like the book. Or nothing like the original musical, or nothing like the story that I have embedded in my mind, exactly canon, based on what is there. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Film is a collaborative art that marries text, visual imagery, animation, sound, music, acting, all these like sort of senses have to come together, sensory outputs have to come together to fit in a way that will uplift and tell the story. And I'm going to tell you, like, even though Diana Ross is super old for this part and doesn't really fit in the idea of it, like, can you imagine someone doing a better job on that song?
I mean, she was 33.
Yeah, so she got older, right?
Well, the interesting part of it is that Dorothy originally was 5 in the books.
Yeah, so she got older.
She was 12. She was supposed to be 12 in the Judy Garland version.
That wasn't true.
Right, they taped down her breasts to make her younger. And then even in the scripting of The Wiz,
yeah,
she's 24.
Yeah, she's supposed to be like 20. Yeah, yeah, because she's a teacher.
Yeah.
Like, she'd been, like, teaching, like, for 3 or 4 years. And, like, you know, like, oh, you can't work in elementary school anymore. You should go to the high school and teach, because high school teaching is the only thing that's worth anything. The other thing I want to, like, acknowledge, you know what? Like, don't, like, chase your passion. Do the thing that you believe in. Do the thing that you love. You know, it'll, like, and be flexible. Be flexible and follow your passion.
You never know what might come along.
100%. But, like, at the end of the day, I mean, that's basically what this movie was, right? It tried to be flexible, right? It was able to pull in Michael Jackson, which was...
Thanks to Diana Ross.
Of course, right? Yeah, and she basically pushed herself onto the film.
Another person to help bring this to life is William F. Brown. He wrote the book of The Wiz for the 1970s and 2015 version that earned him a 1975 Tony Award for Author of a Musical, along with Love American Style, and that is all that he is known for, according to IMDb. The other one is definitely more famous, and most people have heard of him, and that is the openly gay rest in power as of June this year, Joel Schumacher.
Oh, really? Joel Schumacher. All right.
He was actually born the same year that the Wizard of Oz film actually came out, and he is responsible for the 2004 version of Phantom of the Opera, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, Lost Boys, Phone Booth, and others. Batman also related...
Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt was the first choice for Eveline, which does share history with Wicked, as the first time that the Wicked Witch was given a name, up until Gregory Maguire names Elphaba, taken from the original author's name, LFB, L. Frank Baum, Elphaba. Other than that, the E start of their name is just coincidental, apparently.
It's like the John Oliver thing where, like, Danbury Town is going to, like, name the sanitation plant after him, right? So, like, now we can say we're going to the Oliver instead of going to the John. But, but, like, you know, like, that's not the thing you want to put your name on, right? Like, why? I just think it's odd that they would name, like, the Wicked Witch after the director. I just think it's strange that they would name the Wicked Witch after the author. That just seems, you know, I get, like honoring him, but, yeah. Like, with the Wicked Witch, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's like...
If you think about it in a way, because the Wicked, it takes... the Wicked Witch of the West, and it turns that narrative on its head, and it says, so you think you hate her because she's wicked, she's evil, she's, you know, but then you're supposed to feel empathy for her. And as we discussed a little earlier on the podcast, L. Frank Baum is a mixed character when we look at him in a historical fashion. And I believe Gregory Maguire might have known L. Frank Baum's history. I am thinking he read all of the books and researched L. Frank Baum in great detail. So maybe what he was saying by naming Elphaba after L. Frank Baum, an honoring of L. Frank Baum in a way that is saying, yes, here is Elphaba. She is a flawed character, just like L. Frank Baum.
All right. I mean, that's actually a pretty solid explanation.
Part of the reason why Diana Ross pushed herself onto the zeitgeist of the creative team of The Wiz to get the coveted role of Dorothy is...
because she knows that role is awesome.
Well, not only that, but Diana Ross met Judy Garland in 1965 when the Supremes performed as a warm-up as an opening act for Judy at the Astrodome Theater in Houston. Yes. And so she commandeered the role of Dorothy from Stephanie Mills for the movie. Stephanie Mills did play Dorothy on Broadway before Diana Ross.
I wish they could have figured out how to make her look younger, though. She looked like an older school teacher than in her 20s. Like, and I don't know, like, if the hairstyle was it, or like what was the thing that made her just look like, because like in my opinion, she actually, like, and I'm not trying to throw shade, I'm really not, but she looked like she was 40. She didn't look like she was 30.
And that is one of the reasons, one of the non-racist reasons why The Wiz did not do well.
But you know what, like, here's the thing, like, they like, in my opinion, I think they should have probably like pushed that aspect and not have like gone with the, like, use the basic structure of the musical The Wiz, but told a little bit of a different story. Because like, I feel like, you know, obviously The Wiz is about racism in context to what like Littlefield was talking about around like this like a sort of journey of like, and I didn't really finish my story around that, but like, you know, you have them plus the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, the Cowardly Lion, who is like this like politician that lacks the courage to like stand up and do the right thing, and they all go to like the Wizard of Oz, which is, you know, like some people say might stand for like the president or whatever, and so you have your like your representative of your state, and your the captain of industry, and the farmer, and the common man all going to talk to the president to have their problem solved, you know. And they think that problem is like based on their path of gaining money, like traveling that yellow brick road with the silver slippers, whatever. And they find out that the president doesn't have any answers for them, but the president does have a plan to help him out that you guys could help him with. And like, you know, so they go off and they like solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And you know, whatever. But like, specifically, like, another like underlying theme in The Wiz specifically is like sort of how racism is an impediment in all the people in Oz, right? Like, when they go and find the version of the Lollipop Guild, what are they called? I think it's like the Winkies or something like that. But basically, like, you know, they've been imprisoned because they were like, you know, doing graffiti or whatever, you know. And I always think it's sort of weird that like we punish people that do graffiti so much. And I get it, like, we don't want our nice clean white walls to have any poor mark on them. But like, you know, like why does someone not care about that building so much that they would do that? So you really need to address that problem versus like the fact that they took a spray can and sprayed on it, like, in my opinion. But like, you know, they have that, they have the taxi cabs that never want to stop for them, right? Like the general New York taxi cab experience, like, and this is where this movie was shot in New York. What, like this sort of like setup drug experience, because they like get chased in a specific way that leads them to like end up like, you know, the poppy fields, like getting caught up in that sort of like drug thing, and like they probably never would have ended up there if they hadn't gotten chased there. In the first place, right? And like a lot of it is just sort of like sort of this like strong allegory about the black experience, but like sort of tattooed on the Wizard of Oz, where, you know, like all these people are just trying to like, you know, become whole, right? Yeah. Like they're all like, Dorothy's trying to get home.
Soon as I get home. Right. Yeah.
It's a beautiful story. And I think a lot of people connect with it, and sort of like, you know, I remember like watching it with you. You were like, oh my gosh, I didn't get this at all when I was a kid.
No. But like, I think that is part of, that's what I was trying to say before, a different cultural experience that you and I both have. And we're about the same age, but like, you know, I think that because I wasn't raised in a black household, I wasn't exposed to The Wiz as much maybe as someone who was.
Yeah, I mean, like, I actually saw it on, like, a lot of local TV, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, and that's why I think mostly because of, like, where we're at is the reason why I was able to see it. Because, mm-hmm. like, you know, you have Detroit stations, like, you know, Motown
yeah.
right there. Like, of course, they're going to throw The Wiz on because I'm sure Motown is be like, hey, you know, play our movie on TV. Right. Like, yeah. let us get some ad revenue and whatever. So like that makes sense to me. So I wonder like what the experience of The Wiz is for someone in California or New York or Alabama for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, I remembered, as a child every year, like clockwork on CBS, they would air The Wizard of Oz. And so
yeah, The Wizard of Oz was on a lot.
Every year we would watch The Wizard of Oz up until we got a VHS copy of it and I could watch it anytime and who cares when it was on. But I don't remember that experience at all for The Wiz. I don't remember watching it other than I think I rented it on my own. And my mom told me yesterday that I had a CD that I made with my handwriting on it where I outlined the numbers of The Wiz. And I don't remember doing this because it's been a million years.
That's really cool.
Yes. I have not. She just told me that it was sitting there and it had my hand because I completely forgotten. I thought, looking back in time, I thought I had a very Eurocentric view of The Wiz and I was comparing it with The Wizard of Oz and it wasn't, you know, it's not the same. It's if you're comparing it, it's not going to be the same and it's not going to live up to your ideals if you're comparing it in the same standard. But if you're taking it and looking at it as its own experience that is made for the African-American view of The Wizard of Oz, which is essentially what all of it is, and how beautifully it all fits together and it makes sense.
I think it's not the African-American view of The Wizard of Oz. Like I get it. I mean, it's using the structure of The Wizard of Oz, yeah. but it's not that, right? Because like, it's not about that. It's about like, it's about sweatshops, right? Like, when they go and see Evelyn, right? Like, you know, you have all those people in sweatshops that are freed mm-hmm. by Dorothy because she stands up to their oppressor, right? And even though, like, their oppressor was, like, literally in the moment, like, torturing her friends,
yeah.
she still figures out a way to save the day and defeat her, right? Yeah. Like, and even though that's like, even though that's similar, right? Like there's like, that doesn't happen in The Wizard of Oz, right? There's no like active, she doesn't free anyone from, yeah, because The Wizard of Oz is not about oppression.
It is, if you're, like I said, it's a very Eurocentric view that The Wizard of Oz is a better movie, let's say, than The Wiz. And that is all that I'm saying in terms of the black experience being brought to The Wiz, that it was shut out of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I disagree with that. Okay. Like only because like that's like saying Star Wars is Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers. However, you can see that there are specific scenes from Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers that definitely influence Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is not Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon. Mm-hmm. Well, and I wouldn't even say like even if Star Wars was like with an all black cast, mm-hmm. right? I wouldn't say that like it would be the black Buck Rogers or that like. And even if Star Wars was also called Buck Rogers, okay. like it is so different than Buck Rogers that it is not Buck Rogers.
It does.
Yeah.
So you don't see The Wiz as an African-American experience at all?
No, it's 100% an African-American experience, but it's not, it is not, you don't just dash African-American experience on The Wizard of Oz and get The Wiz.
Diana Ross is Dorothy, born in Detroit, Michigan. Known for Lady Sings the Blues, The Wiz, in between these two, Mahogany, it starts her success with the Supremes, fictionalized in the subject of Dreamgirls, a musical about that group. Icon, famous around the world, mother of Tracy Ellis Ross from Black-ish, still alive and still amazingly one of the queens and royalty of music.
Yeah, most definitely. Pop icon, yeah, definitely.
Michael Jackson is Scarecrow, born in 1958, Gary, Indiana, known for being the king of pop. The Wiz was his film debut at 19 years old. Shortly after, he would be in such music videos as Moonwalker and Thriller before getting too famous too early in life and getting tangled up with sexual assault involving minors, dying at the age of 50 in 2009.
I don't know if it was the fame that was the problem. I mean, there are tons of people that are famous early in life that are fine. I think it was more over like his father molesting him, like, yeah, allegedly, and like, you know, other things going on in that family that probably like spurred that. Yeah. I mean, cause like, Natalie Portman, okay, has been acting since she was
fine. And I think you're right. I think a lot of it was, and that's why I was kind of saying tangled up with sexual assault. Because in a way he was doing it, I believe, in my, you know, unfortunately, the evidence is there. But I think a lot of it had to do with his father starting out. I mean, and his father, you know, was trying to stifle his stardom at the very beginning and being super controlling. And, you know, that is not good for anyone. And so no wonder he, you know, had the tragic ending that he did.
Yeah, I also think that like his tragic ending is Michael Jackson's tragic ending is mostly due to, like, you know, I mean, like, yeah, his doctor obviously was enabling him, but like at the end of the day, like, your doctor's supposed to be taking care of you.
Right.
You know, like figuring out ways to like keep you alive and keep you healthy. And yeah, he was trying to help him manage through his work. But like at the end of the day, it's not like Chadwick Boseman. Like,
yeah.
Great actor.
Like, Wakanda forever.
Like RIP, like, yeah, a great actor. Alex Trebek, right?
Yeah.
Like he has his cancer,
yeah,
right? And he's still like, you know, he's still doing it, right? Like and that is different than literally working yourself to death.
To death. Yeah. Which is what I believe again Michael Jackson did. Before he did, he won numerous awards and nominations. He was the role model. I mean, I would say he was a role model for especially, you know, people in the black community and an international superstar that was recognized all over the world. Like there was not a place he could not go and people not recognize Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
One person who I'll be honest, I didn't know a lot about, Nipsey Russell.
Yeah, it's one of the older ones.
As the Tin Man, born in 1918, Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah, and it shows in this work. I mean, he's great. I think he was a great choice for the Tin Man. He was known as a mainstay on variety shows such as Laugh-In, The Dean Martin Show, Match Game, and Car 54, Where Are You?, Barefoot in the Park, Wildcats, and Posse. Ted Ross as Lion or Fleetwood in the Real World, who is known for 1981 version Arthur, Police Academy, The Fisher King was his last appearance as a limo bomb. Mabel King as Eveline was born in 1932, Charleston, South Carolina, known for What's Happening, The Jerk.
Yeah. Jerk.
Yeah, the TV show What's Happening. Yeah, she was the Jerk's mom.
And she played a mom in pretty much every role she was in.
Yeah, she unfortunately got a lot of, as they call them, mammy roles.
Yep.
And it is what it is. But like Mabel is a very, very talented actress and singer.
Yep. Right along that, we have Lena Horne as Glinda the Good.
You know,
oh my!
Like,
amazing,
Lena Horne. Like she shows up, and it's like, ah, and she's like, you know, if you believe in yourself, you know, and then that's like, and that's why I give you so much pushback on how like the Wiz is different than the Wizard of Oz, because when. Mm-hmm. Does anyone tell Dorothy to believe in herself?
Glinda does at the very end. She tells you, believe you had the power the whole time. You just didn't know you had it. and all you need to do is click your heels three times.
Yeah, like, so not. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, you know, it's the idea of like, well, you had it all the time, right? That's sort of like, you had it all the time. Mm-hmm. No, like this, like, and this is like different. It's like saying that is the difference, right? Yes. Like, I feel like The Wiz actually like makes true on the Wizard of Oz story as Dorothy being a feminist hero, mm-hmm. her own hero, right? Because like even with it, like the her whole story around it is that like she doesn't believe in herself.
You gotta work, and if you work, you can achieve this.
So she doesn't even push against her Aunt Em about like working in elementary school. Like she should be like, dude, Aunt Em, I like being like I'm fine with this. I'm like where I am. Like I don't need a man. I don't need a different job. I like working with the kids. And she does say that a little bit, but she does like, you know, she doesn't, it feels like she's like half-heartedly pushing away and saying, no, I got this. Mm-hmm. But like, and Glenda is saying, look, you should be saying, hey, I got this. You know, you believe in yourself. Yeah. You home is where you want it to be. Right. You when you believe in yourself, when you have confidence in yourself and you love yourself, home is everywhere.
Known best for Cabin in the Sky, Ziegfeld Follies, and Stormy Weather in the 1940s. She left school at 14 to be a singer at the Cotton Club in Harlem, performing alongside people like Cab Calloway and Duke Ellington.
So a funny thing about the Cotton Club, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they were allowed to perform there, but they were not allowed to attend.
Correct. Had it not been for racism being the mode of the time, and still today, be honest,
yeah, I mean,
she would have been a much bigger star. Alongside Paul Robeson and her progressive beliefs, she was branded as a quote-unquote communist sympathizer and blacklisted in the 1950s. So that's why there's no credits of her past the 1940s. When they made Showboat in 1951, she could not play Julie, who is African-American. And she would have been amazing as Julie, singing Lovin' That Man of Mine. That was a travesty, in my opinion. And just... truly, she was a one ahead of her time. She won an African-American Film Critics Association Legacy Award, 4 Grammys, NAACP Image Award, Kennedy Center Honors, Walk of Fame, and a Woman Film Critics Circle Award for acting and activism. Thankfully, she died at the old age of 92.
I mean, it is what it is. Like, I think the true story of, like, what The Wiz is that, like, you know, you have all these like really spectacular characters that are just like oppressed and held back. And if they weren't, they'd probably be able to, like, you know, be put to better use.
Yeah.
Right. And that's sort of like, unfortunately, the story around racism is like, you know, because we choose to limit access, we don't have a true fight for the best quality people in a position.
Richard Pryor as The Wiz, or Sherman Smith.
Sherman Smith, dog catcher.
Well known for an actor, comedian for Bustin' Loose, which he won a 1981 NAACP Image Award, Superman 3, but sparked a special magic that happened with the late Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder. Yeah, I mean, you can't, if you're going to talk about Richard Pryor, you have to, like, mention...
Gene Wilder, yeah.
100%. Mm-hmm. Richard Pryor was an incredible comedian. That being said, he was so incredible, honestly, that, like, Gene Wilder, who also was an incredible performer, like, he always had awesome things to say about Richard Pryor. Always. Yeah. Like, I dare you to go onto YouTube and listen to Gene Wilder say one negative thing about Richard Pryor.
They loved each other. They were a great, great working pair. I mean, Silver Streak, See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Stir Crazy.
Stir Crazy. Blazing Saddles.
No, that wasn't them.
In 1975, won Best Comedy Written Directly for the Screen with Blazing Saddles. He shared with Mel Brooks alongside others.
Richard Pryor was not in Blazing Saddles. Yeah, they wanted him to play the sheriff initially, but he was not.
So he wasn't physically in the film. No, you won't see him in Blazing Saddles, but he worked on Blazing Saddles. Yeah, I'm not confusing him with Cleveland Little, but he was working on the Blazing Saddles movie as well.
Yep, Cleavon.
Cleavon
Little.
And the songs, the music in this is...
Yeah, we were talking about like Andrew Lloyd Webber and like his like one shot in the musical songs, right? Like and the Wiz is at, like, you know, the Wiz is like the Little Shop of Horrors to me, right?
So much more powerful, in my opinion.
Like, song after song after song, where, like, you know, you think of Little Shop of Horrors, like, you know, like Guys and Dolls, right? You don't think of one song when you think of Guys and Dolls, right? Like with Cats, like Memory. But specifically, you know, there's like all these power songs in The Wiz.
Well, Andrew Lloyd Webber actually did take The Wizard of Oz and rebranded it and remade it and put back the original opening version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Birds fly over the rainbow. Why, oh, then why can't I?
When all the world is a hopeless jumble, Charlie Smalls is the composer to thank for all of the music that you hear in The Wiz that you cannot get out of your head. It is amazing. He is 100%. Best known for music documentaries and other TV award shows, starting with The Monkees in 1968, 35th and 40th Annual Tony Awards, The Rosie O'Donnell Show, Glee, Pose, along with so many others. Of course, the man himself, Quincy Jones, still alive, known for The Color Purple, producer, In the Heat of the Night, X-Men, Days of Future Past, won 49 awards, wrote some songs along with Nick Ashford, died in 2011 at 70, known for Guardians of the Galaxy, The Italian Job, The Bodyguard, and Money Talks, married to Valerie Simpson, same credits as Nick, but still alive. Anthony Jackson, still alive, known for New Jack City, Sister Act 2, and Deep Water Horizon. But what makes everyone rejoice and to be thankful is the one and only Luther Vandross, who wrote the release song near the end, Everybody Rejoice, A Brand New Day. If this song doesn't make you feel optimism, not sure what is wrong with you or what will. Our choir did a mashup of Ease On Down the Road and this song, and it was amazing. Vandross was born 4/20/51 in Kips Bay, Manhattan, with a life that ended too soon at 54 years in 2005. I mean, he was a winner with the American Music Awards every year. He was nominated from 1988 to 1996. Favorite Soul R&B Male Artist, 4 Grammys.
Yeah, Motown Sweetheart.
And earned his Walk of Fame in 2014. Also, the remake in 2015, Charlie Smalls is credited with all of the songs except Ne-Yo wrote. They took out less popular and catchy ones that Q, Quincy Jones, wrote in the original. So I will say Q is a patriot. Is in Quincy Jones.
Yeah, definitely. Like you're talking about them like breaking through the panel when Dorothy first shows up in the Land of Oz.
Yes.
She breaks through the skylight that says Oz, and then it breaks and shows a Q. That's pretty cool. That was a good scene. They have a lot of fun little like nods to like our reality in the movie.
In 2015, we returned with The Wiz again. Matthew Diamond, who also worked on Jane the Virgin, collaborated with Tony Award-winning Broadway and film director Kenny Leon. He also won an award for Hairspray Live for the following year as well to direct The Wiz back to life in the modern era. Writers beyond the original William F. Brown were Harvey Fierstein, also Hairspray, and Tina Tippett. The stars came out for this one. There was Common the Bouncer. Amber Riley is Atta Pearl instead of Miss One with Thelma Carpenter. Uzo Aduba was Crazy Good as Glinda the Good Witch of the South. Stephanie Mills' original Dorothy on Broadway as Aunt Em. Elijah Kelly as Scarecrow 8 years after he was Seaweed in the award-winning performance of Hairspray, singing a very similar song. You can win! The darker the berry, the sweeter the juice. Say it ain't so, but darling, what's the use? Neo oils some kinks out, I feel, in his performance of Tin Man. Plus, added more Vandrosian style songs with We Got It, Y'all Got It. Very catchy and uplifting.
I tried to watch the what they showed on CBS.
Mm-hmm. So the original was airing on CBS. The new one was NBC. David Alan Greer, nominated for a Tony this year with A Soldier's Play, is the baddest ass of them all as the Cowardly Lion.
Yeah, he does a great job in that. That like he was one of the best part of that, I think.
Mary J. Blige is fierce as Eveline. Naively beautiful Shanice Williams stands out as the ingenue, as age-appropriate, finally Dorothy, and wonderful powerhouse Queen Latifah, who played Elijah Kelly's mom in Hairspray, replaced Richard Pryor as The Wiz.
I don't know. I felt like Richard Pryor was kind of like a good choice for The Wiz, only because, like, and I appreciate Queen Latifah more than anyone probably would understand. Mm-hmm. But, like, Richard Pryor was a good choice because, not because of being a man, but, like, Richard Pryor himself saw himself as a fraud. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what The Wizard of Oz is. Like, I don't think mm-hmm. Queen Latifah has ever sort of felt, I don't know, honestly, like, it may sound super weird, but I feel like Hillary Clinton would make a really good Wiz. Self as a regular human being that's willing to, like, be a badass and mm-hmm. like do what she needs to do to, like, you know, right, like she's yeah. she, but, like, you know, you could even, like, hear it in Richard's comedy, right? Like a little bit of his self-loathing,
yeah,
right? And, like, that's the Wizard of Oz, you know. Yeah. And, like, don't get me wrong, like, I mean, like, as a performer, Queen Latifah is more than capable to play the Wizard of Oz. But I think, like, specifically with movies in general, you kind of, like, it's like the Iron Man principle, right? Like, I mean, like, who else would be Iron Man if it's not Robert Downey Jr.? Do you understand what I'm, like, and that's really, like, what, like, any, like, if you're real Hollywood, like, you try where people are like, holy shit, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. Yeah. He's Iron Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, certain characters, yeah, they're so iconic that you can't think of anyone else that would have played that role. Well, it was interesting. I'm also thinking, too, of all the whizzes that I've known in filmed versions of some version, either the Wizard of Oz, the Wiz, or the 2015 version of the Wiz, it could be the timing, but
right. And for me, like, I get like, and it is possible. It's 100% possible for, like, you know, someone else to, like, you know, take over a role and be like, oh yeah, like, obviously, like, I can hold the idea that, like, there's two different versions of this in my head. But I feel like
no one's heard of Frank Morgan unless they know about the Wizard of Oz, and he was the original wizard. But everyone knows Richard Pryor. Everyone knows Queen Latifah.
He did it best. But I get what you're saying, man. Yeah. I'm throwing shade on a Queen, not on purpose. But, like, you're right. The original was, she's better than him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did a much better job than he did. He, like, I didn't even necessarily believe that he was putting on an act, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. that's the thing that sort of needs to be sold, is, like, he's trying to just pretend like, you know, he's trying to use his bravado to make himself seem better than he actually is. Yeah. And then once he's discovered, he, like, shrieks away. But it does, it feels super cartoonish with him. Yeah. Like with Richard Pryor, you feel sorry for him.
I'm a fraud.
In when she crashes through that skylight, mm-hmm. that it looks like the playground that those kids are in, mm-hmm. like the materials there kind of feel like they spell out Aesop. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people, you know, obviously Aesop is super old, obviously like Greek, and this story is not, no, not at all, but it is a fable in itself. It's an American fable.
I believe he was black as well. I mean, if he was...
Yeah, he but it was, you know, Greek civilization. But like they believe that the name is supposedly Ethiopian, and like you see sort of that imagery happening. Like I think the snow NATO at the beginning was interesting. Like only because remember like she's looking for Toto at the very beginning, yeah. and like there's like it's snowing, and she's looking for Toto, and then all of a sudden this tornado comes. That's why I get snow NATO.
Snow NATO, yeah.
Well, because there's fire NATOs now.
Yeah, and there's shark NATOs, obviously, you know.
Yeah, yeah, there's tons of shark NATO films, and I think there should be a snow NATO because, like, no one ever talks about that. I mean, obviously, we have the snow NATO visible, like Glenda blows the snow NATO away, specifically Michael Jackson's character as a scarecrow and him. Like, it looked like they, like, cut up a book of quotations and, like, stuffed... Mm-hmm. That like so he's like pulling out random quotations, which I found it was really funny. Like there's a lot of really cool things, like you know, like the 650 dancers they had for like the Oz mm-hmm. scene, like you know they're like you got to be dead red, don't be caught dead red.
The scene in green.
Green. It's a really fun like sort of look at. How things did, and I really liked the sort of like media aspect added to it as well, where like you know they can't get in until they sort of like you know prove their sort of worth on the media, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden they're able to go in and get sent on this task. Yeah, I don't know. It's a really fun musical. I suggest you see it. Like the music is just super powerful and yeah. fun.
I mean, the original is available on iTunes to rent or buy, and the new version, the 2015 version, is not available anywhere that we can find. The music of the 2015 version is available on all streaming platforms.
Yeah, definitely, and I would check that out. I find it really interesting that like I've seen this show done tons of high school and college. Stages, and it's really odd, super odd, that there's like no other cast recording other than the two we've mentioned. That makes no sense. It makes no sense.
Right. I found that odd too when I looked for it. Yeah, it was done on stage. It was talked about doing it on stage, but we don't have a recording of it.
I'm really surprised that like if Motown doesn't, if they still have the rights, why they haven't like found like. A bunch of modern singers to just do a cover of all the songs. Like, I don't know why, like, well, I mean racism, but other than that, like this musical should be lifted up. I mean, you know, like I'm glad that Dreamgirls had a much better time of like translating itself mm-hmm. yeah. to like popularity in musical form. I think like The Wiz is a great musical. I'm really saddened that it didn't do better, and I think part of it probably was a production company that I'm not blaming Motown. I think probably whoever helped distribute it.
No, actually it is directly related to racism because the film cost $22 million to make and did not perform well at the box office, but it did go on to have a cult following in 2003. Entertainment Weekly named it 28 out of 50, which probably helped bring about the 2015 remake. Part of the reason it did not do well, racism strikes again, as theater chains in white neighborhoods didn't schedule The Wiz because of fears that it would scare off white regulars.
Wow. So they didn't put it in theaters.
100%. Yes. So yeah. Like, no, it was totally blocked by racists.
And we will say that movie wasn't played in theaters, which is based off of racism to begin with. 100%. It's like the whole thing going on with you know, I'm sorry. We're like, I tried not to mention Trump and then all this, but I'm going to say it. It's like the whole thing around the the soldiers with Trump, right? Like, you know, there are people like, oh, Trump isn't that awful with soldiers. He's like, no, the whole time he's been talking crap about it the whole time. So like it's the same thing around the Wiz, right? Like they're adding these other things to create doubt.
It's not the reason, right? It's not the reason. Yeah.
It's a really beautiful musical. Like, don't worry. It's like the idea of Do the Right Thing, the movie Spike Lee put out. Like, it didn't cause mass riots. It was fine.
Yeah.
Like seeing the Wiz is not going to make you hate or love The Wizard of Oz more. It is a different musical. Yeah. It really is. It's like, honestly, I would say, like the Little Shop of Horrors musical versus the original film.
Yeah.
They are different movies. They're both called Little Shop of Horrors, but they are not the same. They're both about a plant.
There's some characters, and there are some characters that are similar, but they're different. Well, thank you for listening. I am Kevin.
And I'm Chris.
Have a wonderful day.
And thank you for joining.
Musical.
Hey, folks, have you ever thought about your favorite musicals?
Musical history.
Like Color Magic Dance, it's so beautiful. Gather close as we talk you through.
Ya da 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 da.
These cherished musical reviews.
Bum, 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 bum.
Musical history podcast.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.